The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Before we begin, everyone do me a favor. Thanks. Read a little thing I wrote called The Federalist Papers. Yeah. I explain how a nation's unlikely to survive without a strong central government to keep it alive. When I launched the central bank, Jefferson called me ill. Now you have my face to thank on every $10 bill. When America was cash-strapped, I pushed past that. Now some sicko makes crypto, and our nation backtracks.
Decentralized currency, yes, I invented it. I'm sure many governments wish they had prevented it. The national cash is how they keep control. But freedom to the people was my ultimate goal. Am I a pseudonym, a group of men? It doesn't even matter. Nope. I invented Bitcoin because fiat is a disaster. A man from Japan or a damn hologram. I'm the reason open season on crypto began.
Does anybody
well,
know
good afternoon and welcome.
This is the Tokens Radio Show. My name is Christy Matthews.
And I'm Linda Kent.
We're broadcasting from the studios here in Redding, California, KCNR. It's a beautiful day here.
Cold. Yeah, that wind's got a little bit of a bite to it, but we do have some sunshine.
And nobody's lurking at the window today, which is really cool.
Not shh, shh, shh. Don't let them hear you.
In case you wonder, today is Sunday, January the 29th.
Scary, huh?
Yeah.
January just flew by.
It sure did. And we have Liam, who is producing the show.
Mm-hmm.
How you doing, Liam? Okay.
I'm hanging out, sorry.
Oh, no, that's okay. He's got several things going on.
He's hanging out. He's doing a bunch of stuff in the booth. So we catch him off guard once in a while.
We have to keep him on his toes.
Yeah. So you can find our other shows at tokensradioshow.com or right here at KCNR1460.com where all the programming here at KCNR can be found in the programming tab of the website.
And just before you go on, just to let people know, somebody has been very busy with our website, and it's looking good. A lot easier to find stuff, a lot of information on there. So don't hesitate to check it out.
There has been a worker bee going on there. Yeah.
Well, good job, worker bee.
If you'd like to call in the show and chat with us, dial in at 530-605-4567. And like I mentioned, the chat room is open at KCNR1460.com. Currently, Bitcoin, oh gosh, that's doing so well. Mm-hmm. It was at 23,711. And it when we checked the number just before we got on show, it was at 23,800. So it is varying by $100 or so. Ethereum's at 1637, XRP is 41 cents, and XLM is at 9 cents. It's doing pretty well. Well, today is going to be story time. We're going to outline the outlandish things that SBF, that is Sam Bankman-Fried, and FTX has been doing in a few minutes, and that's going to come along here after we have a little crypto speak. So, without further ado,
you've got to pick a card.
Let's pick a card. Just grab the whole deck.
Yep.
And what
do we have
here? We have Bitcoin.
Ah.
It's always a good time to review Bitcoin.
Yes, it is. So, the card is Bitcoin, like she said. All righty. The Bitcoin category is intended to introduce and educate you on what is, quite possible, the most important technology ever invented. Bitcoin is a digital currency that allows for instant payments to anyone, anywhere in the world via decentralized peer-to-peer, P2P, network that is not governed or controlled by any central authority or institution. One card at a time, you will learn the functions of Bitcoin and everything it has to offer the world in a simple, fun, and engaging way. It's time to be your own bank. Bitcoin.
I would wholeheartedly agree with that. Need to be our own bank.
Yeah, as you will see here in just a little bit.
Oh, my Lord. Yes.
Excuse me, how true that is when we start doing story time.
Yes, indeed. We did pull a little bit of an audible about that at the beginning of, before the show. We were, it's just this particular article that we're going to go through. We just had to change things up. So we'll get to that in a minute. But first of all, How about a little FUD not?
Oh, yeah.
You know, fear, uncertainty, and doubt not. Well, a little country in South America called El Salvador was one of the first South American countries to adopt Bitcoin as its national currency.
Mm-hmm.
And they had borrowed a few bucks. Like $800 million.
That's with an M.
Yes, from the International Monetary Fund, and it helped them buy more Bitcoin and help them with their infrastructure. So it had been said, "Oh, it's such a mistake. El Salvador is losing money, especially as Bitcoin kept going down in value."
Mm-hmm.
And people, you know, you just can't. When you understand Bitcoin, it's not about the value of Bitcoin because it's tied to a fiat currency, the United States dollar. That's generally how we determine what it's worth. But it's not that. And their president, President Bukele, understands that as well. And so he wasn't concerned about the paper losses that was that was occurring with their Bitcoin portfolio.
Right.
Nonetheless.
And it's quite interesting, yes. You know, you didn't see in the mainstream media or anywhere anything about this story.
Right, you did.
You know, only time El Salvador really gets into the news, I think, is all negative stuff, bad.
Yep.
You know, they can't repay it. People are going hungry.
Yep.
Bitcoin's a scam. They're going to be the first to lose, blah, 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 blah. Well, that's not what happened.
Well, that is very true. They actually paid off the entire $800 million bond.
Plus interest.
Plus interest in advance, on time, and it's paid off in full. And President Bukele is saying, you know, I have the receipts. He's going back and has documentation of all of the FUD reporting that was going on and what such a mistake and how irresponsible it was for this country's leader to bring such risk to their people.
Mm-hmm.
And that is not the case.
Yeah, I mean, they just kept spreading the narrative how broke El Salvador was going to be.
Yes.
Over this. You know, and they got called out on it.
Yes.
You know what I mean? That they actually were a lot smarter than most.
Well, the Salvadorian people are faring much better.
Yeah.
Now than they had been.
Yeah, because they went ahead and got on that ship, so to speak, on the Bitcoin ship, and it's worked quite well for them.
Yes.
Down there.
It sure has. So,
I like that. Before we go on, I kind of like the little quote they have in there. Well, we just paid in full $800 million plus interest. But of course, almost nobody is covering the story. I just found one in Spanish from Colombia.
Right.
They lie and they lie and they lie. And when their lies are exposed, and then they go in silence mode.
Yes.
Yeah. So.
Yes, and there are many other countries that are following.
Yes.
El Salvador is leading the way. So applaud to them.
Mm-hmm.
Keep it up. And President Bukele knows the truth, and he's trying to decouple themselves from the USD fiat currency.
Right.
So shall we go into it? Try to do this. This little
FTX scandal. That this is a gift that just keeps on giving.
It sure does.
So we kind of thought we'd do like a story time.
Yeah. Clifford. It's story time. Sorry to bore you with that. Just being grandparents, we're kind of
most of you probably don't know who Clifford is.
It's kind of ingrained in the brain. The big red dog.
Yeah.
So this is the audible that we called. Rather than just summarizing this story, this actually came out by the Unlimited Hangout, and it's uncensored investigative journalism. And you may have heard about Whitney Webb. She's a renowned investigative journalist, and put this article together.
Mm-hmm.
About FTX and the Curious History of Farmington State Bank.
And we have mentioned them before, but now we're going to kind of make more of a storyline for you,
well,
for lack of better
words,
so you can understand exactly this part of it, what was happening or is happening, I should say.
This article reads like a mini novel, and it is a bit long, so if you will bear with us, we wanted to read it to you in its entirety because I just think it just would not do it service if we just pulled things out.
Right.
Yeah. So.
All right.
So, Liam, do you have our mood music?
I do.
Okay.
All right.
Would you like to?
Okay. So, to begin with, since FTX collapse, a tiny bank in rural Washington has come under heavy scrutiny for the role it may have played in the crypto exchange's fraudulent activities. Ed Berger and Whitney Webb investigate the history of the bank and unearth some of the troubling connections. So here we go.
Do you want to go
ahead? Go ahead.
In late November, Protos began. Protos is another investigative organization. Began demystifying the mysterious ties of the bankrupt and fraud-riddled cryptocurrency exchange, FTX, to a small bank in rural Washington known as Farmington State Bank. Given that it has only 3 employees and is one of the smallest banks in the entire United States, Protos noted that the fact that this bank somehow finds itself embroiled in the largest cryptocurrency fraud in history, it's puzzling, disconcerting, and totally out of place, to say the least.
Okay. While the Protos, is that how you say it? Protos?
Yes.
This sounds... Peace shed some light on Farmington State Bank and its recent transformation into FBH Corp and Moonstone Bank. There is more to the story. Despite being a small rural bank, Farmington / Moonstone, since at least 1995, has had ties to some of the most covert and criminal offshore financial networks of modern era, with connections to intelligence-like financial fraudsters of considerable notoriety.
In this unlimited hangout investigation, we pick up where Protos left off and begin lifting the curtain behind the FTX financial labyrinth in an effort to piece together the networks behind the elaborate crypto Ponzi scheme. This is critical work as the FTX bankruptcy proceedings have been oddly maneuvered, so to avoid revealing who, aside from Sam Bankman-Fried, the disgraced CEO and face of FTX, had control of the exchange and its subsidiaries. The network behind Farmington Moonstone, subject of this piece, is the first of many threads tied to FTX that we hope to pull on in the coming weeks and months.
Archie Chan finds Farmington. Farmington, a sleepy rural town in Washington State, saw it once promising economic fortunes turned to dust during the Great Depression of the 1930s. The Great Depression had also crushed the first iteration of Farmington State Bank, originally founded in 1887, and a new bank of the same name was created in May of 1929. Much of Farmington State Bank's history is hardly noteworthy. Joining the bank in 1973 was C. Wayne Wexler, who served as the bank's president for over a decade. Throughout the 1970s, the bank held around 1.5 million in deposits, which grew modestly during the 1980s to around 3.5 million. I'm trying to get it to work.
Around 1990,
No, go ahead.
Around 1995, Farmington, for reasons still unknown, attracted the attention of a British citizen residing in Hong Kong named Archie Chan. According to a 2010 interview given by Farmington's then-president, John Widman, Chan bought the bank in 1995 when he was looking for a chartered Washington bank that might become a platform for international banking. Though this never came to pass, Chan's connections suggest that his interest in the small rural bank may have been manifold.
Chan acquired Farmington through a holding company registered in the British Virgin Islands, BVI, called Farmington Finance Corporation. The lawyer who aided him in setting up the corporate structure for the new Farmington organization was David K.Y. Tang, whose career in law and business spans Seattle, Hong Kong, Beijing, I can talk, also served a stint as a chairman of the Federal Reserve Bank of San Francisco, imagine that, the central bank branch that was technically legal oversight of Farmington. According to a different Proton's investigation, the same component of the Federal Reserve System took over regulatory duty for Farmington Moonstone earlier this year, which seems to have glossed over Moonstone's for profit foreign interests.
Thoughts plickin', thickens. The plot thickens. Okay. Though it remained under BFI jurisdiction, annual reports from Farmington State Bank reveal that Chan's Farmington Finance Corporation maintained its office in the Jardine House in Hong Kong. That property is owned by the interests of Jardine Matheson Holdings. That company is the successor to Jardine Matheson & Company, one of the largest foreign trading companies in the Far East for much of the 19th century, which was extensively involved in entrenching British political and economic influence in Hong Kong. It also played a key role in the opium trade. Notably, Archie Chan has claimed to be a member of one of the oldest and most prominent Hong Kong families, suggesting a potential familial link to the power networks of early colonial Hong Kong, where Jardine Matheson was particularly prominent. Later, Chan's Farmington Finance Corporation relocated to St. George's House, also in Hong Kong.
Further investigation into Chan reveals that he was, until relatively recent, the executive director of Gloria Sun Enterprise. Gloria Sun Enterprise is the main company of its parent organization, the Gloria Sun Group. The latter began as a textile concern in Hong Kong in the mid-1960s, later expanding into the fields of finance, real estate, and other ventures during the 1980s. It now boasts property holdings in Hong Kong, China, Singapore, Canada, and the United States.
What a web.
Yeah.
Chan's association with the Gloria Sun business complex has been long-running. According to SEC filings, he became the company's secretary of Gloria Sun Enterprises Limited in February 2005 and then joined the corporate board as a director in August of the same year. However, over two decades before this, Chan had been acting as the group's primary business consultant, a position that required him manage the various partnerships and subsidiaries that made up the fledgling empire's vast reach. Documents submitted by Gloria Sun to the SEC state that he would act as a director in various joint ventures where Gloria Sun controlled 50% or more of company stock. Chan, in other words, was Gloria Sun's chief business agent at the time that he purchased Farmington State Bank.
Gloria Sun Enterprises is mostly held by Gloria Sun Holdings Limited, followed by Advanced Tech Holdings. Other shareholders include members of the,
Young
family, some other executives, and the Texas-based Dimensional Fund Advisor, LP. Both Gloria Sun Holdings Limited and Advanced Techs were registered at the address 263 Main Street in Roadtown, the capital of British Virgin Islands. This is a location of CCS Trustees Limited, a corporate services firm that handles the legal registration for business seeking to set up holding companies or subsidiaries in offshore tax havens like BVI. CCS Trustees itself seems to have focused on Hong Kong-oriented businesses and even maintains a subsidiary called Cayman Hong Kong Corporate Services Ltd. CCS's founder, William Ayang, sits on the board of the New Medium Media Group, a Hong Kong-based telecommunications firm.
According to SEC filings from 2007, Gloria Sun's principal bankers include the Hong Kong and Shanghai Banking Corporation, more commonly known as HSBC, and Standard Chartered Bank. The former has had a historically close-knit relationship with Jardine Matheson. The two have engaged in joint ventures with one another, while members of the controlling family of Jardine Matheson, the Keswicks, have often held leadership positions at HSBC. Standard Chartered, meanwhile, is closely tied to the Inchape family, a fixture of the British ruling class with numerous concerns in global shipping and manufacturing.
When it comes to dealing with stock assurance and other business affairs in the United States, Gloria Sun retained the services of the Bank of New York, now BNY Mellon, a banking institution with a notorious history of involvement in organized crime like money laundering and capital flight. Gloria's son itself has maintained a strong presence in New York City, where it has been an active player in the world of Manhattan real estate. Their New York-based activities have included partnerships like Polylinks International, a consortium of leading Hong Kong families that has invested heavily in the real estate markets in New York, San Francisco, London, and elsewhere. Polylinks is best known for its 1994 deal, which Gloria Sun did not participate in with Donald Trump when the future president, well, it shows when this was written, when the future president, I guess you could still look at it that way, found himself, yeah, I think it was six, saddled with a number of debts and was able to pay what he owed for the construction of his troubled Riverside South Project. Polylinks stepped in and effectively took control of the development. In 2005, portions of Riverside South were sold to the Carly Group.
A deeper look into Gloria Sun. The chairman of Gloria Sun is entrepreneur and billionaire Charles Young. Hailing from China's Guangdong province, Charles and his brother Young Chung Fan founded Gloria Sun as a small-scale operation in the 1960s. Today, the brothers own the majority Gloria Sun through the fairly complex structure of holding companies mentioned above. They are significant stakeholders in Gloria Sun's holdings and in Advanced Tech Holdings, which has larger stock holdings in Gloria Sun's various corporate units.
The rapid success of Gloria Sun's propelled the Young brothers, Charles in particular, to heights of not only economic but political power in Hong Kong. He served on the Provisional Legislative Council, a special legislative body set up during the handover of Hong Kong from the United Kingdom to the People's Republic of China. This is illustrative of Charles Young's position with the pro-business, pro-Beijing wing of Hong Kong's ruling class. He has also been affiliated with One Country, Two Systems Research Institute, think tank, and with the Hong Kong Progressive Alliance, a business-led political party that has had ties to liberal factions in the Communist Party of China. Young has also been active in the Democratic Alliance for Betterment and Progress of Hong Kong, which absorbed the Hong Kong Progressive Alliance in 2005.
I think now we're starting to see a clearer picture. But it's coming up time.
Yep.
It's probably a good time to
take a break. And with that, we will take a break and we will continue this conversation, or we may come up with something else during the break. You are listening to the Tokens Radio Show here on KCNR, 1460 AM and 96.5 FM, and we'll see you in three.
Just a song before I go, to whom it may concern. Traveling twice the speed of sound, it's easy to get burned. When the
Shasta College is now offering 2 years of free tuition for full-time students. Spring semester begins January 17th. Advance your career, learn a new skill, or get transfer ready. 8-week online or in-person classes available. Enroll at shastacollege.edu.
What does great pizza and ice-cold beer have in common? Charlie's Tap House and Mobile Catering, of course. Charlie's Pizza, Pasta, and More, made from scratch with old family recipes using only the finest ingredients. Charlie's will not disappoint when you bite into the bacon spicy mambo pizza. Get ready for an experience you won't find anywhere else. Call Charlie's today to book their patio for your next birthday, baby shower, anniversary, or any other private party. Remember, everything is homemade using secret family recipes. Be sure to try their famous sundial steak salad with perfectly grilled steak tossed in their homemade tomato vinaigrette dressing. Charlie's Tap House, your ultimate beer experience. Charlie's Tap House rule number one, come for the homemade pizza, stay for the beer wall. Charlie's Tap House rule number two, never stay empty-handed. Charlie's Tap House and Mobile Catering in two locations, Anderson Outlets and in Reading at the corner of Shasta and East Streets. Charlie's Tap House for dine-in, takeout, or delivery. Ask about booking their patio for your next private event. Charlie's Tap House, bringing family and friends together.
Take a stroll down Memory Lane at Memory Lane Antiques and Vintage. Whether you're looking for tools from the past, vintage clothing, collectibles, jewelry, or something that just reminds you of the good old days, you can find it at Memory Lane. Those special shabby chic and vintage style items are seen in every nook and cranny. So what are you waiting for? Sure, you can check out their Facebook page, but it's a lot more fun to explore the past and find your treasure.
Memory Lane Antiques and Vintage in the Shasta Gateway Shopping Center.
Shasta College is now offering 2 years of free tuition for full-time students. Spring semester begins January 17th. Advance your career, learn a new skill, or get transfer ready. 8-week online or in-person classes available. Enroll at shastacollege.edu.
And welcome back. If you want to call in, the phone number here is 530-605-4567. Before we went to break, we were talking about Archie Chen. And the story continues, the gift that keeps on giving.
Farmington Bank and Moonstone Bank. Well, to continue, Charles Young also appears to have maintained a presence in Macau. The former Portuguese colony that since the 1990s has been one of China's special administrative regions. The economies and banking systems of Macau and Hong Kong have been closely intertwined for decades. The city was known as one of the world's premier zones for the then illicit gold trade, which was heavily fueled by Hong Kong banks and their international partners, with HSBC being one particularly notable example. Important gold smuggling institutions in Macau included Sanghang Bank. For many years, the controllers of Sanghang were a small syndicate that included Ho Yan, a gold smuggler with close ties to the Chinese Communist Party. Here we go again. And Cheng Yutong, founder of Hong Kong's New World Development Company. New World would later be involved in the Polylinx Consortium that took control of Donald Trump's Riverside South real estate project.
In the early 1980s, Ho Yan and Chen Yung Tong and their partner, Lo Dohi, I'm not sure, sold Sung Hung to Arkansas political kingmaker and seasoned traveler in the worlds of international commerce and intelligence operations. Jackson Stevens, as well as his close friend and banking partner, Mokhtar Riady,
I guess.
Yeah. This purchase curiously took place the same year that Stevens and Roddy took control of Worthen Bank in Arkansas. and entirely closely connected to Little Rock's Rose Law Firm and the rising political fortunes of the Clintons.
Yeah,
wow, okay. Say it's not so. As the Sun Heng, Stevens, and Roddy unloaded the bank in 1989 to STDM. This company, founded by Hong Kong Macau billionaire business Stanley Ho, held a monopoly over Macau gambling industry. Ho himself has been haunted by numerous accusations of association with organized crime elements that operate in Macau's underworld. No.
This is just too good. This is where Charles Young reenters the picture. When STDM purchased Sun Heng from the Stevens Riotti Syndicate, it maintained 100% ownership and placed its own directors and executives on the bank's board. In 2007, a major stake in Sun Heng was sold to the Industrial and Commercial Bank of China, the ICBC. Due to the wariness that various businesses showed when it came to dealing with Sun Heng, largely due to its reputation as a casino bank, ICBC set out to revamp the bank's image. It dispensed with a handful of old directors, figures like Stanley Ho, however stayed on with the board and replaced them figures that exemplified a new corporate ethos. Charles Young was one of the ICBC's new appointees.
Yet, Chung himself had been plagued with accusations of involvement with money laundering, particularly as it related to Gloria Sun's operation in the Philippines. Gloria Sun set up a manufacturing base there in 1976, which grew into the Philippines' second largest apparel exporter by 1983. This shift, which was part of Gloria Sun's efforts to move its manufacturing out of Hong Kong in search of lower costs, happened alongside a thaw in the China-Philippine relationship. For much of the Cold War, the government of the Filipino President Fernando Marcos was stalwarty, anti-communist, and maintained close ties to the PRC's rival. Some of these words, the Kuomintang? Some of these Chinese words are hard. The nationalist Chinese. Likewise, Marcos closely collaborated with pro-KMT China lobby in the United States.
According to Sterling and Peggy Seagrave, the roots of the thaw can be traced to an arrangement made in the context of the Nixon-Kissinger overtures to China to bolster foreign currency reserves in Chinese-owned banks by the infusion of gold and other metals and cash held by the Marcos family. A documented trail exists showing that during the 1970s, an incremental but steady flow of capital was deposited into various banks in mainland China and in Hong Kong.
Gloria Sun was accused of participating in the smuggling of Filipino wealth abroad as it was pilfered by the Marcos family through a complicated series of transactions and orders between the Philippines and Hong Kong. A legal complaint filed with the Philippine Supreme Court charged that Young and the other Gloria Sun executives acted as friends or dummies, cronies, or otherwise willing tools of spouses Fernanda and Imelda Marcos in the legal salting of foreign exchange. They
reportedly,
thank you, did this by importing fabrics from one supplier at prices much higher than those being paid by other users of similar materials. Other documents from this case show that Archie Chan was also identified as participant in the scheme. No.
That wasn't money laundering.
Not at all.
In the end, Gloria Sun was acquitted of any involvement in dollar salting, the movement of capital, which is, for example, the movement of capital out of the country without the approval of the Philippine Central Bank. And it was under peculiar circumstances. Other case filings note that the court held that the documentary evidence relevant to this allegation against Gloria's son was inadmissible for being mere photocopies.
The Gloria's son and Archie Chan would have connection to the Marcos family, and their financial schemes is significant as other key players that enabled those schemes intersect with Jeffrey Epstein, Maxwell, what's her first name?
Ghislaine,
thank you. Network explored in One Nation under blackmail. One of Marcos' family's main accomplices was none other than the arms dealer intelligent asset, Adnan Khashoggi.
Khashoggi. We've all heard about him. Yeah. Yes.
Key to Khashoggi's murky finances in the 1980s was Jeffrey Epstein, who, for unspecified period, was hired by Khashoggi for the purpose of either finding or hiding large sums of looted money. Epstein likely helped Khashoggi with both. Another top financial advisor to the Marcos was actor George Hamilton, who in the early 1990s was a confidant and vacations companion of Ghislaine Maxwell, right up until she publicly aligned herself with Jeffrey Epstein shortly after her father's death in 1991.
And the plot continues to thicken.
We got some other players in here.
Gloria's son may have additional ties to this network via Mast Industries, a Hong Kong-based export-import firm with a specialty in textile goods sourced from elsewhere, across Asia. During the early 1970s, Leslie Wexner contracted with Mast to supply fabrics to be used for his corporate flagship, the Limited. By the end of the decade, Wexner purchased Mast and became a major subsidiary of his corporate empire.
While this is currently no evidence that indicates that Gloria's son used the services of Mast Industries, though it would not be surprisingly, given its status as one of Hong Kong's major apparel companies. There are nonetheless connections between the two companies. During the late 1970s, Mast Industries formed a joint venture called Cinotex with Crystal Group Limited, yet another Hong Kong-based apparel manufacturer. A review of the affiliations of the Crystal Group's founder, Kenneth Lowe, shows that he moves in many of the same circles as Gloria's son, Charles Young. For example, both are honorary vice chairmen of the Hang Seng University of Hong Kong, the head of the Crystal Group's intimates division. Meanwhile, in Lo Wing Sing Eddie, who had previously served as the managing director of the Gloria's Son major subsidiary, Gene West.
Aside from Gloria's Son and the Young family, Archie Chan has another connection that is worth noting. In 2009, Chan was made a Knight Commander of the Royal Order of the Kingdom of Poland. His sponsor was Paul Kan Man Lok, a Hong Kong technology-focused businessman who had previously been honored by Queen Elizabeth and numerous heads of state for his humanitarian service. Paul Kan is the founder and chairman of Champion Technology Holdings. Like Gloria's Son and Chan's Farmington Finance Corporation, Champion Technology has made use of holding companies set up in the road town BFI. I'm sorry, BVI. That's British Virgin Islands.
Right. Cons, Champion Technology has maintained a long-standing relationship with the People's Liberation Army, PLA, and the PRC's primary military organization. The PLA has been an active player in the worlds of Chinese and Hong Kong businesses, operating both overt and covert fronts for both the acquisitions and development of cutting-edge technology, as recounted in a 1997 Forbes article. Khan found himself partnering with the PLA in the late 1980s when he hoped to set up Champion Technology Division in China dedicated to radio paging technology. The bureaucrats at the Ministry of Post and Telecommunications dithered, the article recounts, but companies owned by the military jumped at the chance. Con now has paging franchises in dozens of cities across China, mainly through partnerships controlled by local units of the PLA.
Changing hands. As noted last week by Protost, Archie Chan is alleged to have essentially done nothing with Farmington State Bank from 1995 until relatively recently. However, his connections suggest that there may have been more to his use of the bank, or the very least, his Farmington Finance Corporation than meets the eye. In 2020, Chan sold the bank to FBH Corporation, which was incorporated in 2019, and whose chairman is Gene Chaplin, a seasoned entrepreneur who went from playing a major role in children TV programming in the 1980s and 1990s to the largest shareholder of Deltec Bank and Trust and subsequently its chairman. It remains unknown if Chalopin knew Chan prior to the sale and how or why Chalopin became interested in the tiny Washington-based bank.
Shortly after Farmington was sold to Chalopin, FBH Corp., Chalopin joined Farmington's board of directors, notably Deltec Bank and Trust, where Chalopin is chairman, was described as Protos as one of the main banks for both Alameda Research, FTX trading arm that played a central role in its collapse, and Tether. As noted by the investigative journalist Nicole Borzi, Deltec ties back to the network behind the extreme corruption and insider trading of Kidder Peabody and Drexel Burnham Lambert in the 1980s, the connection of which to shadow banking that Jeffrey Epstein's are detailed in One Nation Under Blackmail, as well as to the intelligence linked figures like Armand Hammer. More on the FTX Deltec Bank connections will be discussed shortly.
Chan sold Farmington to a company based in Baltimore called GUVJEC Investment Corporation, of which Chalopin is president. GUVJEC, however, was originally created by Robin Trahan, a self-described banking and fintech advisor whose focus is on bringing blockchain technology to the masses by integrating the fintech industry and traditional banking. His LinkedIn says he has been a partner of Chicago-based Credit Capital Funding for decades. However, Trahan is a senior VP of Deltec International, the parent company of Deltec Bank and Trust. Trahan oddly excludes this from his LinkedIn profile.
Trahan and, how do we say it? Chalopin are listed as executive officers of FBH Corp. According to SEC filings from earlier this year in February, listed as directors of FBH are Noah Perlman and Gary Rever, referred to a filing as a Gary Rever. Perlman, at the time of FBH Corp's incorporation, was chief compliance officer of the crypto exchange Gemini. He is now implosion of FTX caused some problems for Gemini, which temporarily halted withdrawals from its Gemini Earn program due to the fallout tied to the FTX bankruptcy. The FTX explosion had affected the main lender of Gemini program, Genesis. Past reports suggest that Perlman was involved in Gemini's 2021 decision to partner with Genesis. Again, like Trahan, Perlman excludes any mention of his role at Moonstone from his LinkedIn profile.
Soon after its purchase by the Chalopin-led FBH corporation Farmington pivoted to deal with cryptocurrency and international payments, but encountered problems moving money. It resolved these issues by seeking Federal Reserve approval and became part of the Federal Reserve System in June 2021.
Oh, wow. In March of this year, Farmington State Bank trademarked the name Moonstone Bank and adopted the name 3 days later. 4 days after that, on March 7th, FTX's trading arm, Alameda Research, invested $11.5 million into FBH Corp. Moonstone Bank. At the time, Chapelpin stated of the investment that Alameda's research investment into FBH Corp. and Moonstone Bank signifies the recognition, thank you, by one of the world's most innovative financial leaders of the value of what we are aiming to achieve. This marks a new step into building the future of banking. It still remains unknown what his multi-million dollar investment was for, though Moonstone's chief digital officer, Javier Chapelpin, that's a strange name, Chapelpin, the son of Gene Chapelpin, told Protos that the investment was seed funding to execute our new plan of being a tech-focused bank.
The exact same day that this significant investment was announced, Ronald Oliveira was installed as Moonstone's chief executive officer until he left Moonstone in August for reasons that are still unclear. Part of the confusion relates to an incongruity between claims from Moonstone executives about the reason for Oliveira's departure, that he had gotten a job opportunity he couldn't refuse.
Yeah.
And what Oliveira was publicly written about his work has since leaving the bank, that he is now working as a self-employed consultant.
Prior to joining Moonstone, Oliveira had been the U.S. CEO for Revolt, a global fintech headquarter in the U.K. The press release, which discusses both the investment on Oliveira's new role at Moonstone, states that Oliveira had engineered Revolt's financial public entry into the U.S. Revolt was created by NJF Capital in 2015 to be a leading digital alternative bank. NJF Capital was founded and is run by Niccolo Jeckerman, a former model and close intimate associate of sex trafficker and financial criminal, imagine who, Jeffrey Epstein. Junkerman was allegedly involved in major aspect of his sex blackmail activities, including the sex blackmail of two sitting U.S. senators in the early 2000s, and later played a role in the intelligence link firm that Epstein had funded, such as Carbine 911. It is also unknown if Alameda invested in Moonstone had influenced the decision to hire Oliveira or vice versa, though neither is outside the realm of possibility.
Well, I don't know if we're going to finish this article, but there's getting to be some very interesting things here. So I'm going to continue on with this. This is partially because the controversial stablecoin Tether also banks with another Chalapan directed bank, Deltec Bank and Trust.
No.
A recent investigation by Revolver News detailed the ways that Tether has shown signs of itself being a Ponzi scheme, not unlike FTX. The investigation also noted that the stablecoin's co-founder, Brock Pierce, boasts connections to Jeffrey Epstein. Pierce, a former child actor in Disney films, had previously been a co-founder and an executive at Digital Entertainment Network, where he and other executives were accused of sexual assault. The case against Pierce was dropped after Pierce paid a considerable sum to one of the plaintiff's lawyers. However, his co-defendant, Mark Collins Rector, the other co-founder of DEN, was indicted on criminal charges. When Collins Rector was arrested by Interpol in 2002, the Spanish villa he shared with Pierce was found to contain rifles, machetes, and child pornography. Den, during its brief existence, produced a program that was described as gay pedophile version Silver Spoons.
As for Tether itself, not everyone believes it to be a Ponzi scheme. As suggested by the aforementioned report published by Revolver News, for instance, Marty Bent, a well-known Bitcoiner who runs TFTC.io, told Unlimited Hangout that Tether has been able to quickly process $10 billion in withdrawals following the collapse in price of Terra USD Luna cryptocurrency this past May. This would suggest that Tether does indeed have reserves at Deltek Bank and Trust and it claims to have. Bent suggested that Tether, instead of being a Ponzi scheme, was extremely high risk and at the mercy of the U.S. regulators and other financial authorities. It has been reported that Sam Bankman-Fried of FTX is now under investigation for the potential role by FTX, Alameda Research, and the aforementioned Genesis Trading in the manipulation of Terra USD Luna prices earlier this year, leading to the crash in their value in May.
In addition, as noted by Dirty Bubble Media, Tether's previous banking partner prior to the Chelopin-led Deltek Crypto Capital was caught laundering money for drug cartels,
wow,
something the aforementioned HSBC has also been caught doing as at a massive scale. In addition, Dirty Bubble Media noted that Tether's leadership has also paid large fines for lying about the state of their reserves, which are ostensibly held by Deltek. Furthermore, Tether's CFO and CEO were involved in one of the largest VAT, that's a value-added tax, tax evasion schemes in European history.
As previously mentioned, Alameda Research was also considerably involved with Chapel Penn's Deltek Bank and Trust, as were other companies tied to the FTX web of companies and Sam Bankman-Fried. These connections between FTX web and Deltek exist at the same time of Alameda's mysterious investment into FBH Corp. Moonstone Bank. Documents produced by John Ray, the newly appointed CEO of FTX following its bankruptcy, revealed that FTX and affiliated companies, subsidiaries, and total of 17 accounts at Deltek. Most of these accounts were associated with Alameda Research and West Realm Shrine Services, both of which were ultimately controlled by Sam Bankman-Fried. Those 17 accounts were held in a variety of currencies, according to reports, including U.S. dollars, euros, Swiss francs, Canadian and Australian dollars, and the British pound sterling. Rumors circulated in recent weeks that FTX connection to Deltek had enabled the latter to acquire Anspacher, another Bahamas-based bank, earlier this year. However, Deltek has vigorously denied the allegations. Deltek has also notably declined to comment on any details of their relationship with entity controlled by Sam Bankman-Fried or tied to FTX. The Deltek Tether Association and the Deltek FTX Alameda Association seems to be suggestive of pattern of the Chapel Penn-led Deltek. Those associations also seem suggestive as to why Chapel Penn would seek to acquire Farmington Moonstone Bank from someone like Archie Chan.
And unfortunately, we are unable to finish the story. But here's what we're going to do. The end of the show, this recording will be put up on our website, and we will link this article. You've got to read the rest
of
it.
Yes, it's crazy.
And please, thank you so much for bearing with us on it. It is just like a novel. So thank you so much. This is really a stinky story.
Yeah.
There's more to come.
Yeah.
And that's it. That's it for the show.
All right. Until next week. We will see you later. Have a great week, everybody.
The government, which governs best, governs least. So in this very critical type of property we call money, the most important form of property in the world, this is another way to look at Bitcoin and the importance of Bitcoin. Bitcoin, very simply, is the government that governs least. It just gives you strong property in your money, and that's it.
Well, Satoshi Nakamoto, that's a name I love to say.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.